Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast, where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the exact same story. I'm Catherine Wolf, and I'm a stroke survivor, a speaker, an author, and co-founder of Hope Heals. Tune in here every week for conversations about wholeheartedly living in a good hard story. Join me in this joyful rebellion to the darkness where we discover the treasures hidden in our hurting. Friends, even 15 years after surviving a stroke that left me with lifelong disabilities, so much of my pain is still a mystery to me. I've spent many days of my life in darkness. In some ways, I'm still in the dark today, honestly. I don't have all the answers to why hard things happen, but I have learned to find treasure in that darkness. I want the same for you, friend. If you're looking for a companion to walk alongside you on your darkest days, I've written a new book just for you. It's called Treasures in the Dark, and it's available for pre-order today at treasuresinthedark.com. I'm so excited about this book, friends, because it speaks so honestly about processing our pain. It's divided into 90 short, easy-to-read devotionals that take specific moments from my life and apply them to your story. The book arcs from hurting to healing and finally to hoping. Honestly, this is the book I wish I would have had, with super consumable little entries for my journey. Today, I'm pulling a story and a little bit of treasure straight from the book. If today's podcast resonates with something in your soul, I want you to get your hands on the full version of Treasures in the Dark. So, if you pre-order today, you will get the following: a downloadable guide for how to pray in the dark, which is packed with over 20 pages of bonus resources. Number two, a series of personalized email messages that speak to your specific pain. Number three, immediate access to the book's introduction. And number four, an invitation to a special virtual conversation with me. So grab your copy today, friends, at treasuresinthedark.com. Now, let's get to treasure hunting together. Honestly, this is the book with those short, easily consumable entries that I wish I would have had as I've walked through various seasons of deep trial. So let's go. Today, for our treasures reflection, we are going to go through for a few moments the final entry in the book, reflection number 90, the benediction for the good hard life. Okay, the good hard life, hence the Good Hard Story podcast and all my thinking and teaching on the good hard life, has really been a deep journey. I have so longed to equip my kids with what I feel like I really could have used, and Jay feels like he could have used when we had tragedy as 26-year-olds, which is a recognition that life is both good and hard at the very same time. So much in our world protects our children from that reality. Many of you, if you're listening, particularly in the Western world, you likely do not spend a lot of time thinking how you can make your child's life harder. However, I think it is super important to start to explain and narrate to your children that life is going to, in fact, be hard, and that hard does not mean that it cannot be good at the very same time. Basically, several years ago, shortly after we'd moved to Atlanta, we were putting both the boys to bed in their sweet little bunk beds in the room they share. And, you know, I'd done it 1,000 times before at that point. And the night was not particularly special. And yet in, you know, getting the kids to pray about the day, it was the usual, God, give me a good day tomorrow kind of prayer. I hope tomorrow is good. And something inside Mama Bear just jumped out of me. And I tacked on to the end of that prayer, words that I now regularly pray for the kids, which is, God, you made us to do the hard thing in the good story you're writing in our lives. Whether tomorrow is the best day or the worst day or even the last day of all of our lives, we pray that you will give us everything we need to live it out to the fullest with courage and joy. And that's kind of become this consistent thing with me, is I really long to narrate to my kids, and Jay does too, that it will be hard. Life will be hard, but it still can be so, so good at the very same time, because a good story is the only story that God can write. So ultimately, somehow, the story is good, even if there are really hard things in the story. And that is not a message I internalized growing up, walking with the Lord, raised in a Christian home. The whole notion of hard and good coexisting was not something I understood. In fact, I would argue likely many of us kids grew up understanding that those are pretty mutually exclusive concepts. The whole notion of good and hard are opposites. That to be good, it's got to be easy. Or to be hard means it's got to be terrible. And it can't be both at the same time. But to really teach our children that life is a story and not a moment, I just think is so critical. The prayer honestly put words around a reality that had been incubating in my soul for so long. It was finally a fully formed, you know, piece of material. It was something I could memorize and get them to memorize and just say constantly, that God made them to do the hard thing in the good story that He's writing in their lives. So I want to just unpack some of this thinking, this benediction prayer, and I'm going to read the full thing at the end. First thought, what is the good hard life? I've really just covered that it's not one note. Nothing is ever one note. So often we want to settle for a little whistle when there's a symphony surrounding us. We stop short. I love that C.S. Lewis quote, that we're content to play the mud pies when the beach is over the next bend or whatever. You know that quote? I love that thought so much, that we are far too content to make the mud pies. Maybe we can link to the real thing in the show notes, since I'm fairly sure I botched it. Anyway, good and hard are for sure not mutually exclusive. They are equal halves of a bittersweet whole. And we have to stop believing the lie that life can only be good or it can only be hard. So for myself and for my family and for you, listener, I will never stop praying that good things happen in your life. But mostly, I'm praying that our definitions of good will expand to include things that are hard and complicated and truly dynamic. So recently, I was invited to speak at a huge gathering of almost entirely college students. And I'm talking a stadium-sized event full of college students. As I was putting together my notes, I spent a lot of time thinking about these kids who had their lives stretching before them. So many possibilities and so much hope. And yes, so much heartbreak to come and disappointment looming ahead in their lives. Honestly, I thought of little Catherine Arnold sitting in that audience. I thought of sweet James Wolf, now 16 years old, who is just a few years from being a college student himself. And what would I most want to impart to that age, mainly 18 to 22-year-olds in the room, and they have their whole lives ahead of them. They're finally out of the house. They're starting adulthood. What do they really need to know? So I took a prayer. I had prayed over my sweet sons that I just talked about, and I expanded it into a benediction for the good hard life. And that's how I closed this message. I want to pray it over you today too, friend, right now. And I want you to get the book so you have it in black and white. Guys, this benediction is not a prayer that will prevent your pain. No, no, no. And it certainly won't protect you from it, honestly. But I do believe it will prepare you to find the treasures in the darkest parts of your life. With no further ado, this is the benediction for the good hard life. And you see, I'm reading from Treasures in the Dark. May you see your life as a good hard story that God is writing. May you open your hands to release old dreams and receive new ones. May you find the miracle you've been looking for has been right in front of you all along. May you accept the stunning capacity you have to endure because of Jesus who endured for you. May you live out the hardest parts of your life with a joyful rebellion against the darkness. May you believe that the boundaries around your life are good and pleasant because God uniquely assigned them to you. May your invisible wheelchairs become avenues to a new kind of freedom because of Jesus. Okay, so let's unpack that little benediction a bit. The first part, may you see your life as a good hard story that God is writing. Psalm 139:16 says, you saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. The way you engage your suffering will change if you start seeing your life as a story written by an author you can trust, even if you don't understand him. I cannot stress enough how important it is to see your life as a story, not a moment. When I was the chapel speaker at John's preschool years ago, the Lord gave me the idea to bring in a children's book, to hold it up and say, hey, everybody, do you like this bedtime story? Oh, yes, Mrs. Wolf. Oh, yes, we like this story. But doesn't a bedtime story many times have hard parts? Don't the characters go through hard things? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But it's still somehow a really good story. And yes, Mrs. Wolf, yes. And I was tapping into that reality to four-year-olds that life can be hard in a moment, but it can be really good in a true story of living it. If our lives are stories, then they are made up of chapters, and the plot is always somehow advancing. Some chapters will be full of ease and delight, and others will be terrible, beyond words, honestly. But the page will turn. Chapters will end and new ones will begin. Hallelujah. Think of the best books you've read or the greatest story you've ever heard. Those epics aren't made up of a string of easy, happy, simple stuff, are they? There is pain and mystery and sacrifice that lead the way straight to redemption. Prior to the stroke, things were largely easy and pain-free for me, honestly. I never really knew how good I had it. Do you know what I mean? I have learned how great things can be even when they are hard. It is such a powerful lesson for all of us. Now, I know and can experience all at the same time. It's always both. It's both and for sure. In the good, hard life, we want redemption more than we want happy endings. Okay, next part. May you open your hands to release old dreams and receive new ones. Isaiah 43, verses 18 and 19 say, "But forget all that. It is nothing compared to what I am going to do, for I am about to do something new. See, I have already begun. Do you not see it? I will make a pathway through the wilderness. I will create rivers in the dry wasteland." One type of grief I experienced was mourning the death of my dreams. That loss might have been as painful as a lot of the literal physical losses that I experienced. I've learned that our dreams can inspire and motivate us, absolutely. Or they can shackle us to expectations and set us up for disappointment in life. I always wanted a family with a bunch of kids. I'm a firstborn. I partially raised my little sisters. I'm Southern. We got big families down this way. I'm fairly high capacity. I like managing a crowd and do it with style. And just had a very strong maternal urge from a young age. So I always knew I'd have a bunch of kids. I would tell my parents when I was little, like, oh, definitely five or six for sure. I'm just going to pack it out for definitely. And I have two kids. I have two kids almost 8 years apart. It is, yeah, it could be kind of crushing that the Lord's only blessed me with two little ones, and I wanted a bunch. And I always thought I'd have a little army of kids close together in age, and they are far apart. And yet, oh my word, I get these two amazing children to steward, to champion, to celebrate in my story. What a gift. And the fact that they are nearly 8 years apart means there is this really unique bond between them. It's precious. They're best friends. And yeah, it's James is almost a co-parent in some ways of little John. And somehow the distance means they don't fight as much probably. And instead are just like these built-in buddies to each other in a way that really blesses my life. Plus, James has really started to step up and help me in life in so many ways. He helps me walk around. He helps me get in and out of cars, just very physically helps me. And now the cutest is that he's training up John to do the same. It's precious to watch. Little John wants to help me walk. And, you know, sweet little eight-year-old isn't fully capable yet. But James is training him to really take care of me. And it's just such a joy. It's like really hard to even remember I wanted a bunch of kids and all close together, because this story, these two children, all these years apart, is such a deep blessing. I can't possibly hang out at what I used to want. Plus, let's be real, I don't have capacity for a bunch of kids. I've got capacity for these two, and that's all. And God knew the limitations of my life and has given me exactly what I need for this story. When we hold our dreams too tightly, our divine imaginations atrophy. We forget to invite God into the plan. I could have never, ever dreamed up Hope Heals or Camp or Mend or a writing and speaking career like this. Like, none of this was in my plans for my life. And yet, how unbelievably beautiful is each offering I get to be a part of. My goodness. In the good, hard life, we have permission to release our old dreams so we can make space for new dreams we couldn't have imagined on our own. That is super important. We get to dream new dreams. We get to, in our adult lives, recognize where we are and pivot accordingly. You've heard me talk a lot about it. We can develop true emotional agility and go with it. This is a new thing he is doing. I'm going to be a part of it. Okay, next part. May you find the miracle you've been looking for has been right in front of you all along. John 12:37. Tells us that the people who witnessed all of Jesus's miracles up close and personal still refused to trust him. This fulfilled a word from the prophet Isaiah, who predicted that many people would not recognize God's arm outstretched and ready to act because their eyes are blinded and their hearts are hardened. Many seasons of my life have felt like the exact opposite of miraculous. And I imagine you've experienced similar seasons. But I had to start asking myself, am I missing the miracles because they are not there? Or am I just refusing to see them? Are my eyes blinded and/or my heart hardened? I've tried to make a practice of looking for miracles I might have missed because that didn't look just like the way I expected it to look. James was actually my first miracle baby. Did you know that? Although I didn't know it at the time. Many people think, including me initially, that John is the true miracle baby. But honestly, James was the first miracle baby. There is absolutely no reason that my AVM should not have ruptured when I had James biologically, naturally, which means unmedicated. I burst blood vessels in my eye level pushing. There's no reason the AVM should not have ruptured then. And honestly, if it had, very likely the doctors would not have known what was happening. So I'm not sure I would be here. And instead, that true miracle baby coming into the world, me being just fine after that birth, is all a true miracle of God. As we now know, that AVM had been there from birth. And here I was, newly 26 years old with that baby 6 months and 5 days old when the AVM would rupture in my brainstem and cause the brainstem stroke. When I start looking for evidence of God's miraculous work in my past, it helped me see His work in the present. My eyes begin to open and my heart begins to soften to the miraculous moments happening today. Looking for a miracle is an insanely vulnerable thing to do. It's like peeling back a bandage and exposing a wound that needs healing. But maybe the risk of asking for the miracle, of exposing the need, is where the healing really happens. Maybe it's less about the miracle itself and more about the radical faith it takes to trust God with your hope for a miracle. In the Good Hard Life, we believe that God is still working in the miracles, even if we thought they looked different than we hoped they would. Okay, next, may you accept the stunning capacity you have to endure because of Jesus, who endured for you. John 16:33, you've heard it on here many, many times. I have told you all of this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth, you will have trials and sorrows, but take heart because I have overcome the world. Jesus never made the reality of being human particularly rosy or all that desirable, honestly. In fact, He straight up told us that we are going to have a pretty hard time with it. Jesus isn't offering us an escape route from the hard stuff. There isn't an unsubscribe option from pain and suffering. He gave us something better. He is offering us a way of life in which suffering can make us better, not bitter. Honestly, it can soften us instead of harden us. It can heal us even as it hurts us. He modeled this way of life first to show us it's entirely possible. He chose selflessness, patience, and humility. He surrendered His comfort and His control. He redefined blessedness and wholeness to include the poor in spirit and the brokenhearted. Through our losses, we can find true freedom. In the Good Hard Life, we believe that endurance looks less like gritting your teeth than it does about opening up your hands. Next, may you live out the hardest parts of your story with a joyful rebellion against the darkness. Deuteronomy 31:6 in the Message says, "Be strong, take courage, don't be intimidated. Don't give them a second thought because God, your God, is striding out ahead of you. He's right there with you. He won't let you down. He won't leave you." Hands down, the most powerful defense I've developed against despair is choosing to celebrate God's presence with me, even in the very worst moments of my life. I like to quote the amazing Brad Montague in talking about how I am having a personal joyful rebellion, and how all of our dear friends with all kinds of suffering can be a part as joy rebels, as having their own joyful rebellion. Side note, the amazing Brad Montague got to come to our recent retreat and encourage all those amazing campers and volunteers with this message that we rebel joyfully to the darkness. And it's glorious to see. celebrating is a sacrifice in some ways, just like everything in life is. And it feels so counterintuitive in times of deep pain. But when we approach it as a discipline, it is a gesture of total trust in God to work all things together for good. Celebration communicates that we don't need to know the specifics of how it is going to work out, but we do need to know it is going to work out. In the good, hard life, celebration comes before desired outcomes. We don't wait to celebrate, hashtag don't wait to celebrate, because God is with us here and now, which is better than any happy ending. Okay, next. May you believe the boundary lines around your life are good and pleasant because God uniquely assigned them to you. Psalm 16:6 says, "The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance." Way back when I turned 30 years old, I had the opportunity to speak at my local CBS Bible study in Santa Monica, California. And I led with this verse that the boundary lines are so good. They've fallen in the most pleasant of places. And it has surely informed my life in these last 12 years. Now I'm 42 and I'm still shouting it out that Psalm 16:6 is the truth. In the early days of my stroke, I felt as if God must have made a mistake in my life. I felt like I should have died for sure. And yet, instead of dying, I was left hanging in this awful middle ground between life and death, unable to really participate in living, feeling like I don't fit on earth. How could this be a part of what God was doing? And what can only be described as a divine dispatch from Himself, God spoke to me on my lowest, lowest day. He told me that He did not make mistakes. He told me that I had been chosen, not cursed. While I don't always like or understand everything that falls within the boundary lines of my life, I'm choosing to embrace them because I trust the one who drew the boundary lines in the first place. Honestly, inside my boundary lines are some really good stuff. My family, my friends, my life right here in Atlanta, Georgia, my church, all my people. My goodness, my life is so full. You know what is also in this life? A big old wheelchair and a lot of limitations. And yet this is the good, hard life, if we have eyes to see that. It's not always easy, but I can choose to love my life because, think about it, the alternatives aren't all that attractive. Bitterness, resentment, despair, anxiety, no thank you. The boundary lines around my life are not a coincidence or a mistake, and they definitely are not a punishment. They've been hand-chosen for me by God with extreme intention, and I can trust that they are deeply good. Do you know Philippians 4:13, that I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength? I think people confuse that verse as some proof that Christians can win any battle or fight through any hardship. But the context of that verse is actually just about contentment, that we have the option to be okay within our limitations. Honestly, within any set of limitations. Paul says it this way, I've learned by now to be quite content with whatever my circumstances. I'm just as happy with little as with much as with little. I found the recipe for being happy, whether full or hungry, hands full or hands empty, whatever I have, wherever I am, I can make it through anything in the one who makes me who I am. That's obviously the message. And guys, in other translations, that says secret. He's learned the secret. I'm trying real hard to learn that. I hope you are too, that there is a secret to being content in any and every circumstance. Ultimately, we can choose to live within Christ. So if our lives are in Him, the boundary lines really must be good. In the good hard life, we can choose to love the lives we have because they are the lives we've been given. Okay, finally at the end. And may your invisible wheelchairs become avenues to a new kind of freedom because of Jesus. You may know Hebrews 4:15 that we do not have a high priest. No, no, no. We have someone who can empathize with everything that we are going through. In this modern age, and particularly in the Western world, boundaries are basically a four-letter word. We worship self-determination and personal freedom. Anything that impinges on our autonomy is seen as an enemy. Having a stroke took away most of my autonomy, honestly. I can't do much on my own at all anymore. And for a long time, I thought that meant my life was kind of over, if I'm honest. But when I started embracing my limitations as the ultimate and most unexpected path to freedom, I started liking my life again. My disabilities have freed me, honestly, from so much. Examples: having a paralyzed face has been my ultimate emancipation from beauty standards. I'm not worried about it. I know my face doesn't look like every other girl's. So what? I get to live in freedom. I don't drive a car anymore. I could sit around crying about that. Or I could recognize I am permanently chauffeured by other people. I don't have to worry myself with driving. Jay says he's driving Miss Catherine. And it's true. I could go on and on. I choose to reframe limitations as opportunities where I get freed from so much stuff. One of my very favorite verses is the Message translation of Galatians 6:5. It says, each of you must take responsibility for doing the creative best you can with your own life. Nothing has required me to figure out my creative best like living with disabilities has. I'm not responsible for what has happened to me, but I am responsible for what I do with it, what I make of it, how I move forward from it. You've heard me say it before, but control of anything is really just an illusion. We're not in control. We want to be, but we're not. But since we are not in control, we can get our heads around that and then do this. Wake up to what we are in complete and total control of. And that's our response. How we respond to it, how we move forward from it, how we honestly remember it, how we narrate it to our children, to our friends, to our family, how we live after the thing we don't have control over has happened. It's life-changing to own that, to have that culpability and know, I got this now. It is how I respond that matters. In the good, hard life, we can find freedom in our vulnerabilities rather than just our strengths. And that is a beautiful way for me to close this episode, this special prayer, this benediction to the Good Hard Life, is by recognizing truly living in a space of good hard life is to see the freedom within our vulnerabilities. Not just when we're getting it all right and living it all right and everything's working out perfectly, but when things are not, that we can be free even in that place because of Jesus. We can embrace all of our invisible and visible sometimes wheelchairs and live right there, the abundant life God calls us to. God bless you, sweet friends. Thank you for joining us on the Good Hard Story podcast. To learn more about what we are doing, follow us on Instagram at Hope Heals. Check out all things Hope Heals at hopeheals.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and please feel free to share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it. Good Hard Story Podcast is a production of Good Hard Story, LLC. It is produced by Leah Case and Mary Austin Hall. And I am your fearless and fabulous host, Catherine Wolf. Come back and join us every week where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the very same story. We are with you and for you, friends.